Hey, what's up? It's your girl, Crystal J. And this week, we're talking about all about IPs. If you're new to my bedroom, welcome, roommates. And this week, like I already told you, talking about IPs. You know, it's about autism awareness this month. But I also want you guys to know it's also about accepting people on the spectrum, accepting special needs. You know, I'm very big on that. So I could not end this episode and this month better than doing IEPs, because I get so many questions, me being not me being an IEP advocate, because I'm not that. That's not want me to claim that, but I'm not that yet. I said yet. Me being an autism advocate, people always ask me about IEPs, and I give the best advice I can, but guess what? I'm not an IEP expert. So I have two master IEP coaches with me today, and we're going to talk about IEPs. So first up is Miss Lisa, and I also have Miss Jay Brown. Hi, you guys.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you for being here. I am so excited to talk about, like, not autism, but to talk about IEPs, because IEP is not just for people with autism. That's right. The question I normally get asked. Is IEP just for people with autism? No. Oh, my nose ring felt, y'all. That is so funny. And I was wearing it. And it's a affinity symbol.
Oh, you're ready to go.
Oh, nice.
I was wearing it for autism, and it was falling as I was talking, and I thought it was so funny. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get off stage, and I'm going to let Miss Lisa tell her story. She has a kid on the spectrum. Actually, all three of us have kids on the spectrum, and we all know about IEPs, but these two are the ones that you guys need to be listening to. Y'all need to book your free consultation. If you haven't, you need to. It's only 30 minutes. You're going to need more than 30 minutes, I guarantee you. And with that being stated, Miss Lisa, what is your autism story?
Sure. So my daughter is 16 years old. She was diagnosed as autistic when she was 8 and a half, but she was identified as an infant as having developmental delays. So we began services for her when she was like 10 and a half, 11 months old. And when we engaged our school district, things didn't go as smoothly as we obviously were hoping that they would. And by trade, I'm actually a high school math teacher. So I'm a general education teacher. My mother was a math teacher, aunts, cousins, grandparents, and as well with my husband. His family are public school educators as well. And so I think we thought that this would be a process that we would be able to access relatively easily, and that wasn't the case. And so we sort of began our unofficial journey as parent advocates in the special education system. And ultimately, it didn't go very well. And my husband actually published a book telling our story. That was his way of kind of coping and his advocacy work. And because I'm a teacher, and similar to you, Crystal, you know, people would come up to me all the time asking for help. I really wanted to get that training. So I found Catherine Witcher, and I went through the Master IEP Coach website. Oh, I'm looking at the notes website, and got my training. So my website is lisabaskinwright.com, and you can certainly sign up with me for a free 30-minute consultation. I'm more than happy to help you with this process.
So my question for you is, so when your child was first diagnosed with autism, they got into the school system. What was that first IEP experience like?
So our first IEP experience actually happened well before her autism diagnosis. So like I said, she had delays, there were sensory differences, there were communication differences. And our big thing for her when she was young was she really lacked self-advocacy skills. And we wanted her to be able to communicate if she needed help, or she was confused or lost or whatever. And so we started asking questions about how to get her support with her communication skills. And it actually took us a year to get her qualified. It was a really, really long not very fun year. And she ultimately was qualified initially as speech only. So that happened right before she entered kindergarten. And then very quickly in her kindergarten year, the speech pathologist, you know, was very aware that there were a lot of sensory processing differences and there were a lot of fine motor delays and all the things. And so she brought the occupational therapist in. So we sort of stumbled our way through kinder and first. And at the beginning of second, it was like hitting a brick wall and everything kind of fell apart. And she ultimately actually had to be homeschooled for the remainder of that year. And it was at that point that during that triennial and the time she was at home, we actually sought out a private neuropsychologist. And that's when the formal autism diagnosis came in. And that's actually when things with the IEP team kind of ratcheted up a bit, because she needed a whole lot more support than what they had originally been willing to acknowledge.
Was that frustrating that now she had a autism diagnosis, now she got more services when it came to the IEP?
Yeah, I mean, I literally, you know, a lot of people kind of talk about a grief process that they have when they find out that their child is autistic. Right. And for us, it was a relief. So her initial, our initial sort of entry into the world of disability was I met a social worker at a park. Like, I had my kids at the park and was just chatting with this family. And it turned out that she was a social worker through like the Early Start program in the state. And she recommended that I get my daughter assessed. And my husband, who's a nurse practitioner, was like, well, we need to make sure that, you know, there isn't something medical happening with her. And she was kind of built like an ice cream cone. She had this like giant head and this little teeny tiny body. And there were concerns that there was maybe a brain malformation or a tumor or something like that. So we started with, you know, brain MRIs and blood work trying to rule out cancer. And when that came back clear, I was like, developmental disability, like, no problem. And then we had all these years of fighting. So by the time the autism diagnosis actually came in, there was a relief of, well, maybe now they'll do something.
That makes sense. Because most parents I talk to, they are grieving their child having autism. They're sad. They have, it's so many emotions when you realize your child's autistic. I'm the opposite. I think because I gave myself 2 days and then I went head in doing everything I need to do for him.
Right.
I'm not going to lie and say I'm not overwhelmed and things like that. I am. But
well, you're human.
We're human. I don't let it get to me. But just, you see, I noticed something. Your daughter was diagnosed a lot later versus a boy. Do you feel like because she was a girl, it was harder to see that she had autism?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, she's a white girl. If she was a black girl, it would be even harder. I think that the fact
you just said a mouthful. I just saw a whole tree fall, come back up. You just said a mouthful.
We need to speak the truth here. And the reality is that the majority of autism research has been done on white males. And probably next in line to that is white females. So yes, it was later. And yes, we were absolutely dismissed at every turn. Mm-hmm. And we have some privilege. Like, I'm a teacher. My husband is a nurse. His family, his dad, has a PhD in abnormal psych and a master's in special education and worked as a district administrator in special education. We had some access to the system and some knowledge. And that
we didn't go in blind like most parents.
No, we didn't go in blind. And to me, I went into teaching because I am just like insatiably curious about how kids think and learn. And so for me, her being disabled was like, oh, she's just the coolest thinker in the world. Let's just figure this out. That's not
how I look at autism. They think differently.
Right. So that's not to say we haven't had really hard times. She's actually right now in the middle of a bit of a medical crisis with these persistent migraines where she went from having one or two a year to having one or two a day. So she's been in a darkened room for like 2.5 weeks. And so, you know, these things kind of pop up and they're scary and we have to address them. And of course, I wish she wasn't in that kind of pain, you know. But yeah, I think there's actually a misnomer. And I think people are told that you will get more services through your school district if you have a specific, you know, eligibility category. It's actually not true. There are 13 eligibility categories within the IDEA mandate. And
13
services should be based on need, not on which door you enter the system.
And you there's said based on the ideal loans, it's 13 of them.
There's 13. And Janelle,
I never knew that.
Speak to this better than I can, and she'll, I think you'll bring her on in a second. But you know, there are some funding differences that can help get some different services, but technically speaking, you should not have to get a certain eligibility. I don't want to say diagnosis because that's the wrong word. Criteria met in order to access a certain service.
I agree with you. Yeah. Because I have a friend, she was going through Hades to get certain things done, and I had to come in and help her, and yeah. I had to do her IEP meeting. Like, I was an advocate. Y'all, yeah. I read that team to filth. Okay, but I am not an IEP advocate, and I tell people that all the time. Like, look, I can read it, I can understand it, but this is not my area. I just advocate for my kid. And I always tell people, nobody is a better advocate for their kid than the parent. The parent has to be ready to advocate and learn and take the time to learn their rights as a parent. When they send you that parent right book, read it so you can actually know your rights. Right. A lot of parents get the IEP from what I have seen, and they really don't fully read it until something hit the fan. And they have to go back and read it. And they're like, oh, I ain't signed up on that. Yes, you did. You just didn't know you signed off on it. Like, I think my son's teacher is over me. We've been in the IEP phase for over a month. I have not signed off on it because it's certain things not in my notes. And I'm like, I said, thank you. I love you because you are taking care of my kid. But this is not what I'm not signing off on it. And she's like, this is crazy. This is our first year. This is crazy. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, but I'm not signing off on this. And that's part of our rights. And most people are afraid to push the envelope and be like, you know what? I don't want to hurt the teacher feelings. It's not about the teacher. It's about your child.
That's right. And both things can coexist. So our situation took a not fun turn, and there were lawyers involved and all the mess, but I still maintain positive relationships with the teachers and the therapists that were working with my daughter. Like, it was almost like there were two things happening at the same time. And the only thing that mattered to me was that my daughter was safe at school.
And that's what you just said. And that is why when the teacher was like, this is just too much, I said, I'm so sorry. I try to be so nice. She asked me for something, I bring it, because my child is not verbal. I don't know what's going on in school. I requested a camera. We already know with the client that I Googled the law, and I realized I couldn't do it. So I tried to be very sweet to my son teacher, and I'm sweet in general, but I just try not to like get on nobody's bad side, because my son can't tell me if you're abusing him in school or not.
Right. And so that, just to piggyback on that, the fact that your son is non-speaking means that it's critically important that you and that school team have a like crystal clear home to school communication system, because he cannot come home and tell you what is happening. You have to have very open lines of communication. I have a client I'm working with right now with a non-speaking child, and it's April, and they haven't heard one word from the school since last August.
What? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, okay.
So it's really important to establish those relationships and know that you're there trying to partner with them.
Right.
You're not trying to, like, you know,
be their best friend, but
you're not trying to be their best friend, but you're also not trying to be their boss.
No,
you're trying to be in partnership with them,
right?
So that your son can access his education And if they have strategies that are successful for him at school, you can be emulating that at home, or vice versa.
I'm shocked that your client is going through that. Like, so I didn't have a homeschool communication in place in this IEP. Because I normally test the teacher, I call the teacher. I'm very adamant on that. So I never put it in the IEP until this year. And it's broke down in sessions and how I want them to communicate with me and what I'm providing for them to communicate with me, because he can't tell me about his day. This year was okay, but next year I want daily updates, a weekly recap. What else I said I want? And I want a 90 week or a 90 day assessment of his goals. So every 9 days I want to have a meeting, and I want to know what's going on in his goals. What can we do? Do we need to take this goal away, or do we need to do a new strategy? So my son's teacher was like, that's a lot. I said, no, it's not. I have time. I'm that parent. She was like, I see. So it was like, I said, I have time. I can do this every 90 days. I don't care. We'll schedule it virtually. I don't have to come in his class. And virtual opened up so many doors in so many ways. So now I'm like, you can do a virtual every 90 days. So I hope your client get what she deserves.
We're working on it.
Yeah.
I know it's hard because I just told you all my steps and they looked at me like I was crazy. And I didn't have an IEP coach with me at my IEP meeting. I hired a master IEP coach, Awesome Achievers in Atlanta, Georgia. I hired one just to help me go over the documents, but I didn't hire her to do the IEP with me because I felt like I was strong enough to advocate by myself and get what I needed. And I actually ran my son's IEP meeting from beginning to end, from my parent input statement to the end of the meeting. I ran it. And I had goals. They was looking at me like, I was like, yeah.
But it makes everybody's life easier, actually.
Right.
I think it did. I don't know if they feel that way, but I think it did. Because I told you, I'm still in IEP month after a month. I'm still in my IEP after a month of planning. Because they didn't add enough communication goals for me. My son is non-speaking, non-verbal, non-vocal. So for him not to be talking, I need the speech goals to make sense. Like, true, him waving, that is a communication goal, but 100%. I need more than that. And that's where we're not agreeing. And I'm like, well, I'm not signing off until he get at least two more speech goals. Well, in Atlanta, communication goals. That's what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long process. And like Lisa said, it's a collaborative process. And you and I had a conversation previously here recently about that daily communication. And to be honest with you, Crystal, it happens to a lot of families. Even a lot of families that I work with have told me that is probably the biggest challenge that they have with their IEP team. And so when Lisa was explaining it, it's like, I hear it all the time. That is as small as it sounds, you know, being able to effectively communicate with your IEP team should be something that us as adults should be able to have. But it's probably one of the most challenging pieces when we're talking about the IEP team that our family has, is that communication. And if you look over, and I'm not all about, hey, we got to go to the regulation, we got to pull up the IDEA law. It states that you and your IEP team should come up with a good communication tool and whatever works for you and your team. So if you and your team have established daily communication and it works on both sides all around, it should happen. And that's what I kind of push my families is push a little for that. See what you all can agree on, and to say, yes, this works for us. And keep in mind, and I always have to tell my families, extend grace always, right? Because we want to be able to, yes, have that respect as the parents and guardians, that they're going to respect us as who we are. And sometimes, because our children are not their only kids or only students in the class. Right. And so extend grace always, that yes, you're going to look at what works for everyone when we're talking about communication. But okay, if it works, like I told you, I have daily communication. My son's 11 years old and I get a daily communication log every single day. it just works for us. It really does. And it's not just all on academics. It's his behaviors. It's anything.
I know you told me. Yes. It was her idea, y'all.
Can somewhat communicate to me what his day looks like, even though he'll elaborate on so many different things, right? But I get it every day from his teacher, and it works for my team, me and my son's team, and it's effective. And that's especially to where I'm at today. That is really kind of what led us to change of placements, multiple IEP meetings, mostly here recently, because of the consistent behaviors that I was seeing throughout his daily communication. That's why I said
her idea.
One of the. Oh, thank you. Thank you for giving me that. But I tell my families that is to push for those what works for you and your team.
So I'm going to tell you why they end up in IEP. They said, how are we going to communicate? I talked to some teacher this week. I was like, don't worry. I will provide. I changed it in the IEP. I literally, when I got it, I went in Adobe, edited, put it in red, all my notes. And I said, I will provide a communication log daily that the teacher must sign off on. I will create it and do it. Teacher was like, okay. I was like, mm-hmm. Even with a summer school last year, a standard school year, ESY, I had the hardest time. I had to go all the way up the board, the chain in APS school system to get a communication log. And during summer, he goes to extended school services. That's in his IEP. I went through hell and back. This teacher, oh my God. Once I got her boss included, then she wanted to start calling me, Miss Jordan. I was like, and then her little sheet she had, I said, I wonder, is this real? Or did Zach really do this today? And then what really killed me about ESY last year, she did all his work for him.
Oh, wow.
When he started back school this year, they sent the ESY package with me. I looked at that thing. I said, so you telling me my nonverbal child who has fine motor skill problems, who is a lay, cannot write, cannot scribble, wrote his name perfectly. He really wrote Zachariah Hurt every day. The teacher was like, well, that's what the teacher gave me. I said, you believe that? And I said, you know what? I'm not even about to go through this. And that is part of the IEP process, y'all. I just want to throw it out there. It's not pretty. Right. Even when you know your rights, it's not pretty. Somebody have a question. Yes, I have a son. Yes, my son gets a daily communication log as well. It's definitely helped me feel better. My child's day. I didn't do that originally. I did it during summer school because I wanted to know what they was going over. And I thought the teacher sucked. I met her. I thought she sucked from the beginning. Just being honest. And that's the reason why I requested it. And she gave me nothing but problems from day one on requesting it. She only let me see the classroom that day. When she was like, well, it's COVID. I was like, I don't care. I want to see the classroom. And I went through so much just to see his summer area to get his schoolwork. I ain't going to lie. I went through hell and back. I'm hoping she's not his teacher this year during the summer. I'm praying that she's on summer break because she sucks. Yeah. Janelle, can you tell me your autism story?
Yes. And you know, not that there's not any other awesome and amazing master IEP coaches. Let me tell you a quick story before I go into my story. Okay. Lisa and her husband's story resonates so much with my story. As she was sharing her journey, I see my story within hers. And I read their book. I purchased it last year, and the story resonated so much with my story, even though we look so different and even though we're advocating for two different types of kids here. Similar to Lisa's story, we did not get an actual autism diagnosis until my son was 8 years old. It was almost like one of the last things that his developmental pediatric doctor wanted to do after 4.5 years of fighting back and forth with the school system to try to really see what was really going on and why my son continued to have a hard time over the last 4.5 years of him, you know, receiving public education. And the reason, and not to say that his doctor was not a really good developmental pediatric doctor, I think it was one of his things that he really wanted to try to see if there was other challenges that he was having medically before we actually did the assessment for his ASD diagnosis. And I knew that there was something because we continued to have challenges no matter what behavior intervention plan, no matter how quick and, you know, how we changed his tools or his supports within school. I knew that there was something that was missing. And so let me take it back to the beginning of the story. When we had initially went to the school to request an evaluation for my son, they did the evaluation when he was 4 and a half. And in the state of Nevada, your kids are able to go to school as long as they turn 5 before September 30th. So he was very, you know, very young entering kindergarten during that time. So he still had a lot of immaturities with him. And so, of course, me as mom, thinking that some of the behavior challenges that he was having, I just thought, hey, he's still a young kid, until closer to his 5th birthday. And there was a call to me at my job saying that my son had destroyed the whole classroom. They had to evacuate the class, and that he was outside on the playground with his shoes off. Us as autism mothers know when we hear shoes off and the things of taking clothes, especially if your child has different types of sensory needs, that right there was very alarming and concerning to me, because I'm like, he took his shoes off. And so that I kept that, requested the evaluation, not knowing how to do it. I went into this whole thing blindly because I was not aware of what the evaluation process meant. I just knew that it was going to be able to provide some kind of help and relief, only because I had friends. Some of my best friends are educators. And so they said, hey, request an evaluation. Did that. Waited thus almost 60 odd days for the evaluation and came back, and they deemed my son ineligible for special education. But they said, oh, but we can do a BIP, which is a behavior intervention plan. So in my mind, again, as a parent who went into this whole process blindly, I was like, okay, yes, whatever is going to help stop the calls and whatever is going to help my son stay in school, because he was being suspended multiple times, now going on 5 years old, you know, in kindergarten. So he was deemed ineligible, put him on a behavior intervention plan. We still had some of the same challenges. So I'm like, okay, something's got to give. And unfortunately, because more of his behaviors were evident than the academic needs that he was having, so they were really pretty much trying to manage behaviors versus really kind of trying to educate him or anything like that. My son got suspended one more time. And unfortunately, because of the extent of the misconduct and how they had to evacuate the class and the shoes and everything, they told me that my son had to go through a medical evaluation prior to him coming back in school. I was having the same types of behaviors at home, so I had to make the hard decision as a parent to admit my son for the first time on his 5th birthday into an acute mental health treatment facility for a kid. At that time, that was the only help that I was getting. Fast forward to the following year, I decided to pull my son out of that school, bring him closer to where my job was, because I worked about an hour away from his school. And mind you, still getting those calls, trying to travel an hour to get to him, brought him closer to me. And that's when I went to meet the teacher that following year for first grade. All I said to her was, hey, we had some challenges last year. And this is during meet the teacher. I was like, I got to get it in. I got to get it in early. And I got to tell her early, because he's going into a general education setting. So this is where all kids with no disability, they don't have any kind of disability inside. I mean, they may have some, but they might be being pulled out or having pull-in services in that area. But the majority of the population of the students is in this classroom. And so I gave her that, and she heard me. And that's the only thing that I needed, was someone to hear what I'm saying. And within that first week of school, she called me on the phone. And I was in tears crying on the way home, because she gave me everything I needed to request another evaluation to say, hey, and she said, I know my principal. He accepted you guys because it was an out of school district request to get him into the school. She said, I know my principal. Submit this request in this email, put X, Y, and Z in there. She gave me all the details that I needed to request another evaluation. And even before the 60 days, I was meeting with the IEP team, and we received eligibility for special education under emotional disturbance. In a lot of states, they call it or other health impairment. Or, you know, like Lisa was saying, there are 13 categories for eligibility under the IDEA law, and that is just one of them. And just like she said, services is not based on your eligibility. It's based on the child's needs, you know? And so thankfully that provided a relief, and having at first that it was more of a resource service. So they were doing pullout services for him. And we realized quickly that he needed more of a more restricted type environment into a more self-contained environment, to where he's only amongst disabled peers receiving the services and supports in that education placement. So fast forward multiple years, here we are at 8 years old, still having some of the behavioral and mental health challenges and social and sensory needs as well. We were still seeing a lot of those. And before I was about to deploy, my husband was already in Turkey, which is another, transitions are hard for him. The doctor said, let's just do this one last assessment, because he had already gone through residential treatment, 12 acute hospital stays, a lot, like I said, a lot of challenge. He was in a special school by this time, so more restrictive environment. And the doctor, I mean, I was there all day. And the thing that I liked about his doctor is that I sat in on the assessment the whole time. And he knows how I am as a parent. He said, don't say nothing. Don't guide him into anything. He allowed me to see what this process looked like as he was doing the assessment. And I'm grateful to that, because I then, similar to your story, Lisa, it was a relief. I was like, wow. You know, I kind of sense when I see the social and sensory needs that he has, I kind of sense that it could have been on the spectrum, but I just wasn't sure. I needed a professional really to kind of help guide me through that process, to give me the right answers, to really show me how I was going to have to parent my child differently than what I was doing, to really kind of help him. And so that's why I said, when I hear her story, it resonates with me because of the fight. And I don't believe that us as parents and guardians should really have to fight to get our kids access to a special education. My child has specific needs, you know, and we shouldn't have to. And so
it's a fight,
everybody's story. Yeah. And everybody's plight is going to look different.
Right.
But continue to advocate for what it is that your child needs.
That's why I say the best advocate is the parent. Now, yes. I have a question for you, because I was really listening to you. My question is, do you feel like because you are a minority, that's why it took forever to get your son diagnosed?
100%. Because my child was in the beginning, he was diagnosed with attention mm-hmm. deficit hyperactivity disorder. And then it went from, pediatric bipolar to disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. So every behavioral and mental health diagnosis was more evident than it was for him to be on the spectrum. My son is, he looks like me, but he's very fair skinned, but I'm the one who's showing up to fight for my son's education. So a lot of the behavioral things, and of course he is, you know, he's classified as Black, right? But of course those behaviors, and a lot of the times the Black community is looked at for the behaviors first. And so they want to discipline those things, and they want to suspend, and they want to do all these other things except, you know, assess our kids for other types of diagnosis that they assume that we don't fall on the spectrum anywhere.
Right.
But yes, I would definitely say that probably was the biggest challenge, is because of his behavior showed up before they looked at him to say, maybe we need to do an assessment to see if he's on the spectrum.
And, you know, sure. I think that's so unfortunate that us as Blacks, and I'm not trying to discredit you, Lisa, us as Blacks.
No, it's a different experience.
It's a different experience, right? That we have to go to so much get our kids diagnosed. But that was not my experience. My experience was different. My son, daughter, has an autistic son. This year he'd be 16. She at 8 months, she told me, I think he's autistic. I wasn't offended, but she wanted to wait longer to see. And when I was ready, she contacted Marcus Center. He got tested. That's the best in the East Coast. And he was tested like that in 6 months. And that was my experience. But he does have a white doctor for autism. But I didn't have as much problems as I see my Black sisters or Black dads go through to get their kids diagnosed. It's crazy. I met a Black couple. Their doctor refused to test their son for autism, but the doctor was white. And the grandma said to me, what color is your doctor? I said, it's a female Black doctor. Just can you give me her information? Because their doctor just refuses. And I said, what, well, your grandchild looks like and acts like my child. I think your grandchild is autistic. And I think it's very unfortunate that they go for behavior issues versus going for autism. I remember when I was, my mom don't remember this. I remember when I was in a special needs class in fifth grade, it was for behavior. It was not for learning disabilities or anything. I was just in that class for behavior. Yeah.
And, I think that's why I was saying.
Just signed the paper. She's because she don't remember. And I had to tell her my experience in fifth grade. And she was like, you went through that? I said, yes, I was in there for behavior. I was very aware while I was in there. I was friends with this girl, and they thought she was a bad influence. So they put me in this special education classroom because of that. Yep.
There was a class action lawsuit against a local district to me. I'm in the Bay Area in California, because that's exactly what they were doing with their Black students, predominantly their Black male students, is that if they deemed the behavior as bad, they were just literally like pipelining into special education, which was then, of course, pipelining into the prisons. And so what's happened is there's been a pendulum swing since this, you know, happened, where neighboring districts are going the other direction, where they're having an experience similar to you, Janelle, where there's almost a refusal to evaluate for special education, and they bring in the district behaviorist and they put them on a behavior intervention plan. And if a child is on an IEP, they can't be on the behavior plan. It's literally like you have a kid that's struggling, and then you hit this point. And it's like, are we going to go this direction? Where are my hands? This direction for special education? Or are we going to go this direction and go behavior? And this was my first year mentoring teachers.
Why are they doing that?
Oh, my God.
And they have four behaviorists for a district with like almost 90,000 students.
Oh, my gosh. That is.
It's.
I mean, wow. And you know, we hear so many different things.
Oh, it's insane.
In this environment. I mean,
I'm so confused.
Don't be shocked. Don't be shocked, Crystal.
I'm not sure.
No, try not to be shocked.
Yeah.
Like, why are they doing that? But I understand.
It was, so the teacher that I had, it was a situation where she'd been consolidated and joined the class late and, you know, all kinds of stuff happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in any situation where there's been a consolidation, I don't care if you've been teaching for a long time or if you're brand new, which this person happened to be brand new, that is a tough situation to gain control of the class. And there were some rambunctious kids in the class. They were darling, but they were rambunctious, and she didn't know what to do. And she was brand new, and she was asking for help of like, really just classroom management strategies. How do I get some help? And oh, you fill this form out. And that's how you get help. So she filled it out on her more outspoken kids who predominantly happen to be Black boys, but the whole class, like, I think she maybe had one white student. I mean, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. Like, I don't want to name the district by name, but like, this is not a school with a lot of white kids. So the likelihood that you are going to be targeting kids of color is high. So the behaviorist comes in, and she's going on and on and on about this one kid who was so obviously at baseline just a sensory seeker. I'm not a diagnostician, so I'm not going to pretend to be one, but there was definitely some neurodiversity happening going on here, some neurodivergence. And she basically said, well, I don't care what the why is behind the behavior. We just have to stop the behavior. And I kind of did like the canine head tilt, like, what?
My mouth dropped as you just said that.
Mine dropped in her face, and I have no poker face, as we can all see.
Right.
I'm just like,
wow.
I'm the same way.
Just say that. And this woman had been a BCBA, like a board certified behavior analyst, and had worked in homes with autistic kids for like 6-7 years before coming to this district.
Wow.
And I was like,
she must not been a good BCBA.
No, she must have been terrible.
She had to be terrible to say that out loud.
And that's so unfortunate.
Because I'm a mentor for new teachers, and I basically just told this teacher, Therese, wow. You know, we're not going that route anymore. And I'm going to teach you how to advocate for these kids through the special education process. And what this district is doing is like patently illegal.
And I really hope they get sued to the point. Never mind. Yeah. I hope they get sued.
Well,
because that's unfortunate.
Eventually they will, because here you have kids who have specific needs.
That's
And they're not being evaluated properly.
That's
and so they're being pushed off and classified in another way. And so the hard part is that until deemed eligible for special education, it would be definitely hard to enter any kind of like due process for FAPE or anything like that.
Right.
Because, and that's the way that they're doing it, Lisa, and you and I both know the reason they're doing it that way is because you can't, it's going to be hard to fight and say that they're not allowing their child to have FAPE. Because at the time, a behavior intervention plan does not necessarily have to have an IEP.
You can
be on a behavior intervention plan, you know, it's not like the IEP where you have a legal driving force where you have to acknowledge that. And every child has to receive a free appropriate education. Sorry for me using just the acronym, but I think that's the way they're doing it, because they feel like they're saving costs, but you have all these behavior intervention analysts that you're paying lots of money for, but they think that it's freeing them up for the cost of special education. To me, it's a no-win, because these kids are going to get lost in the system they're going to be routed the wrong way.
It's
not going to be based on their needs. It's going to be based on what they see, unfortunately.
Right. Well, Aaron, my husband, will often refer to special education as a behavior referral plan, because the kids that do externalize behaviors are the kids that capture attention differently than kids like my daughter, who internalize everything and kind of crumble. And so, you know, let's be real here. I think it boils down to two things. It boils down to lack of funding and discrimination, because there's no will. There's no will to fund, because we see disabled people as less than. So we don't have, it's like we don't have the capital. We don't have the status, the urgency to fund the IDEA, the Individuals with Disability and Education Act, to get proper funding to our schools to then, you know, capture these kids. I mean, child find, which is part of the mandate. You know, Aaron says it in his book, you know, you didn't find her, we brought her to you.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I read IEPs all the time, and there's a section that asks like, who initiated the process, basically, I'm paraphrasing.
Yes.
99.999% of the time, parent.
That's what mine said. Parent. Yep.
And teachers, you know, similar to what Janelle said, well, if they really, you know, because I do believe that teachers on the whole care, but they will pull a parent aside and they will say, you didn't hear this from me, but this is what you need to do. This is how you do it. Because if the teacher goes to administration and says, hey, I've got this student in my class, I've got some concerns, I think they need to be evaluated for special education, they will get slapped on the wrist before they can get the words out, especially if it's kinder to second. They will get stopped like this.
I think it's unfortunate. And I think it's also, and Trenise, as long as we keep having a great conversation, I don't know. But I think it's unfortunate. I feel like most teachers don't say anything to parents, because some parents are not ready.
They're
to
not
here.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Your kid have autism,
absolutely.
Or it's something wrong with your kid. Well, it's actually nothing wrong with your kid. I'm telling you to help you for your kid can get the best education that they are deserve, and that is mandated. That is law. But some parents are not ready for that.
No, absolutely. a lot of the teachers that I mentor, their parent population is not ready to hear this because their perspective on disability is that there's something wrong with their child, their child's broken in some way. There is absolutely nothing wrong with your child. Right. Your child's not broken. Your child has a different neurotype.
Right.
They engage with their world differently.
Right.
We're just here trying to help explore what those ways are so we can meet your kid where they're at. Yeah. True. Yes. And it's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a death sentence. Your kid's just a different learner.
Yeah.
That's it.
And to add
your support needs in certain situations with certain kids. Absolutely. Can that be exhausting and terrifying and overwhelming? Yes. The worst part is having to navigate all these systems. That's the part that's hard.
That is the hardest part. Jeanette, that's you want to add to that comment that most parents act like it's a death sentence?
Oh, yes. And I wanted to add too, because culturally, growing up as a Black woman in our culture, as the Black community, when we heard when we even seen someone who carried a label, and I'm going to use the word label, right? But quote unquote, it was deemed as something's wrong with that person or that person is crazy. So to even just to speak amongst the Black community, because I had a parent here recently who all she was like is, I don't want that label. I don't want that label. And I had to really share my story and break it down to her and say, you know, that should be the least of your worries.
Amen.
The thing should be is, how can I help my child? Throw the labels out, throw the eligibility, you know, throw the 13 categories out and all look at what is it that your child needs. She told me, my child is struggling. I think my child is, you know, is dyslexic. Okay, all those things that your child is having a hard time with, the label and how they are deemed eligible in special education should be the last thing that you're worrying about. And because of those labels, there is that fear in the Black community that no one, they don't want to speak up. They don't want to label their kid as such, you know. And then when they look at, and like I told you, my son has been in a self-contained classroom pretty much all of his education. And they look at that room as the special room. Or even like my 13-year-old son says, even kids walk around and say, that's so sped, because of the classification and what it looks like. We got to take that away. And let me tell you something. My son is receiving the most help, the most supports, and the most services in that area, because he would not be able to walk around this middle school in his what would be normal to him. My son would have too many sensory and social issues. I already know that. So that space is what gives him what he needs in his education placement. Mm-hmm. He gets everything that he needs in this place. So if anyone is listening and you're afraid of those labels, it's not a death sentence. It's an avenue and a way for access to get your child what they need. You got to look at it in a different way, and you got to change your mindset, because we're in 2022 where those things shouldn't even matter anymore. It's about getting what your child needs.
Right. And the other thing too, is that schools don't diagnose.
No.
So whatever eligibility category is checked off to get, you know, to gain access to that appropriate placement, it's not within their scope of practice. So the school is not diagnosing your child as autistic or that they have a learning disability. I realize it's a nuance, but what they're saying is they meet the criteria, the eligibility criteria, and now let's look at needs and set goals and appropriate services and support, all the things. So if you're afraid of the label, I mean, in many ways, there is no label within the school system, at least not a diagnostic label. And I think people really confuse the two. In fact, lots of people that work in schools confuse the two. And it's like, that's out of your scope of practice.
I want to add to what Janelle said. In the Black community, it is very unfortunate that some people care more what people got to say about them versus getting their kids services and really advocating for that kid versus, the word I heard growing up was the R word. And as I got older and as my son was officially diagnosed, I no longer used that R word. Even like before he was diagnosed, I stopped using it. I was starting to train my mind and change my mindset. It's all about mindset. And I would answer this. It's because they're not educated about it. I was not educated on autism or IEPs until my son was diagnosed, and I took the time to learn about it. I took the time to buy the books and the resources and to actually learn what is IEP, what is ideal law. Everything they're saying, I know what they're talking about. I'm not lost over here because I took the time to educate myself. And I think parents have to realize we got to take our time to educate ourselves on what these coaches are talking about. Because when you hire them, I want you to be like, okay, what does this mean? I want you to take time to understand, okay, Janelle said this, Lisa said this, but now it's my time to use my voice and advocate when they're not there. That's what it's all about. And it's also all about the kid, but we as parents, we have to know our right. And somebody said, I agree, you're spot on, Janelle. I agree, she was. And being just in this community, and me, I would say, I'll shout out my family. They've been so open to autism learning, understanding my son needs, his eloping. They've been so open. He wears a leash when we're out. I know most people of color judge people when you see somebody with a leash. My family no longer does that. They'd be like, oh, I understand. I'm like, thank you so much for trying to understand why I have to buy a leash and my son is on my wrist as we go places. Thank you for not judging me. And right. I have Black parents that walk up to me like, where you get that from? I need it for my kid. Mm-hmm. I got it from Amazon or I got it from here or there. Why do you use it? I said, because my child, and look, what does that mean? My child leaves our permission. My child has autism. He's very unaware of danger. He'll walk in the parking lot. He's not aware. He'll walk away. Just Easter, he walked down the street. Nobody realized he was gone until I said, where's Zachariah? And thank God that his grandma neighbors had him and my best friend walked up to the neighbors and got my child. I was so blessed. But that is a sign. That's something we'll talk about. Eloping. You can put that in the IEP as well. My child eloped. You can put it in the comments. But these are things we don't know. We can put accommodations in our IEPs. It's not about what the school has. It's about addressing the needs of that child. And I think mm-hmm. that is a problem that most people don't realize. Like, well, if the school doesn't have this available, it's not about the school. I need this for my child. I need this for my child, and I know this is what he need. I'm gonna end right there.
you're saying it. It's so right. It is 100% right. The accommodations to me is what really makes it more helpful in supporting the child in whatever education placement that they're in, and no matter what category they fall under for eligibility. The best thing that, especially when I look at my journey of the IEP process personally for my son, the best thing that, and the best team for sure, I'm here in Virginia, and my son's IEP team here, we just recently did a reevaluation. So you get the triennial evaluation. So according to the law, it's every 3 years, your child will be evaluated to, ensure that they still will be eligible for special education. And if there are any other needs or anything like that, you know, they go back through the whole evaluation process. And here in Virginia, what I learned, and this was so new to me because I didn't see it in any other states that I've advocated through, is that they have a primary, secondary, and a third category. And so my son recently has been changed for his eligibility, now falls under ASD, primary, and ED, secondary. And this has never happened in any of the other states. They used to tell me, no, it's only one and that's it. We only can cut. And so I'm like, okay, well, does it really matter what eligibility he falls under? He has X, Y, and Z needs, and these are his accommodations. Exactly what you have been saying, Lisa. It's based on not the eligibility. It's what are the services and supports that this child needs. And so for parents and guardians out there that are listening, please understand that it's all about those needs. The category just gets you access, like Lisa said. And I love that you said that. So families can really understand. It just gives you access. But when you sit down with your IEP team, it opens the door.
It's one of those things that people are told. So of course
you're so right. And they stick to it. They stick to it.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he wasn't eligible for under ASD. So he can't get X, Y, and Z. No, that's what they want you to know. but break those barriers, break those challenges that you're having respectfully, right? And sit down with your teams and really advocate for your child. What I tell my families all the time is you have to bring the story to your team, especially for those families that are just entering this whole IEP process. You have to bring your child's story to the team. They only know your child from if they've been in the early intervention program. So they're only looking at paper, not your child. You bring your child's story to the team. In every IEP meeting, not recently, because my team knows my son now, the initial meeting, I had a picture of my son. I had a little biography of who his family, where he falls, the different medications he's on, his different diagnoses, my child's interests, the things that he loves, his challenges or weakness, whatever you want to call it, in there. And I brought that to the table because they needed to see a clear picture of who my child was and not who he's not, because we're going to get there. We're going to talk about those challenges and how they can support and help my son. But I got to bring my son's story to the table, because at this time he can't. And so that's what we're doing. We're bringing our kids' story to the table and sharing those needs and those supports and accommodations that your child needs, and allowing your team to kind of work collaboratively with you to create the best IEP for your child. And it's not just academics. It's not just academics.
No, absolutely not. And I think that what can get lost in this process, because it is a legal process, right? So we can get lost in the first we do this, and then we talk about this, and then we talk about that, and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And it can be very deficits focused. We are talking about a human being. So we really need to make sure that their humanity is brought to that table. This is a full human.
That's why I go through the IEP. I talk about the strengths. And it's funny what you just said. My mom said it. Okay, I do. In the beginning of every school year, I have a resume about my son. It's a picture. When I meet this teacher, I give you this letter. It breaks down everything. It has like 10 fun facts about Zachariah. My nickname is Zach. I go by Zach, but you can call me Zachariah for learning purposes. And my mom was like, "You gonna get that to the teacher?" It was 2 pages. She read it, and she knows my child. And I know somebody may say, "You are just too much." No, my child is nonverbal. So I have to be his voice, and I have to make sure that you're not going to look at his IEP and you're going to guess who he is. You want to know who he is, because I'm telling you who my child is. And funny fact, my son's teacher did not have his IEP in the first week. And I says, "Okay, I got it. I can send it to you. You need it." And that's another thing parents need. When you get a copy of the IEP, get a paper copy and get a digital copy, because you're going to need it. Because if you go to different school system, they may lose the paperwork. You're always going to need that IEP. You can go to my website, ZachariahWorld.com, and download freebies to make sure you have a binder with all your kid IEPs, or have a folder on your computer. I have a folder on my computer with all his IEPs. And even, I have a question. I know somebody going to ask me, ladies, what's the difference between a 504 plan and IEP?
Janelle, you want to take it, or do you want me to?
Short answer, 504 is more so geared towards accommodations. And people think, oh, 504 plan is not legally driven. Yes, it is. There's some legal drivers to enforce those accommodations. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily based off of a diagnosis. It's based off of the accommodations that the child needs when we're talking about 504 accommodations. So say, for instance, and this is just giving you an example, if you have a child who's been diagnosed, we're going to use it with a diagnosis, with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and they may need some accommodations to kind of help more with focus, and they need to have preferential seating, so they need to sit in the front of the class because they're easily distracted, what have you, but they don't necessarily need an IEP, an individualized education program to kind of guide those services and supports. They just need an accommodation to kind of really help them access their education based off of those things, because of the attention. And that's just a quick definition of the two. There's the 504 is geared toward more accommodations, and the IEP is more supports and services.
I love Lisa, how you did that.
Did I break it down?
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, well, two things I think I would add to that. The first is a 504 is considered general education. Oh, so yeah. While, yes, it is a legal document, you don't have the same procedural safeguards if something goes awry. So if those accommodations are not being met, it's more difficult to hold the school accountable. And it's really, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's more teacher dependent. So you might have a teacher one year that is part of the 504 planning meeting that's like, yes, absolutely, I'm happy to support your child in these kinds of ways, and these are the things that I can do in my classroom and this and that. And you're like, woo, we got it. And then the next year you go and you have your son's summer school teacher. Right? So with the IEP, it's, yes, they're both legal documents, but you have procedural safeguards. There's a, not that I recommend it, but there's a whole due process. It's just, there's a different level of accountability. The other thing, and I don't want to like bash 504s in any way, because I do think they're appropriate in certain situations, but I do feel strongly they rely on the child being a really good self-advocate. And if the child doesn't have those skills to be able to go to their teacher and say, hey, I'm supposed to get extra time on test, or hey, I'm supposed to take a break right now, or hey, I'm then it's not going to be as successful as an IEP plan. Oh. There are direct services. So with a 504, your child is not getting any services. Mm-hmm. It's those accommodations that they are more responsible for sort of speaking up and getting for themselves. But, you know, we were talking about this earlier in the conversation with the behavior intervention plan can almost be like a stall tactic or a diversion. Mm-hmm. I think 504s function in that way as well. And parents don't realize it. And so they're told like, oh, well, they don't meet the eligibility criteria for an IEP, but we'll give them a 504. And the parents are like, great, because they don't necessarily know the difference.
Right.
But there are.
I just had a friend go through that, but then she ended up getting the IEP out there. I kept talking to her. Like I said, I'm not an IEP advocate, so do not hit me up. I just ended up helping a friend. And she ended up getting, her first daughter had a 504, and then it turned into an IEP. And I was like, I'm so happy for you. And, but that meeting was, that IEP meeting was a joke. They was not prepared. They was gonna derail my friend. Like, and I was in the meeting just really quiet. And then when it was time for me to say, nope, we need accommodations, and we went over every accommodation that was allowed in her school district. And I said, wait, we need to add one more accommodation. And when she tried to add one more accommodation, they tried to fight her tooth and nail. I said, no, that you can do that. She can have that. She can, if she's learning and she has to stand up to learn because she's tired of sitting down and is not interfering with nobody, you can put in her IEP. Like, you can put accommodations in IEP too. So I think, 100%. But people don't realize you can put so many accommodations in there for testing. When you take a test, like how my son would take a test, his test would be expressive. He would be pointing and he won't be like signing things or anything like that, but I had to put that in his IEP. But a lot of people don't know the law. I googled Georgia law to understand what was the accommodations in Georgia to understand what could I ask for in this meeting. And people don't realize that meeting is so draining, but I had to do the research.
Yeah. And it goes back to what Lisa said. Please read those procedure safeguards. Don't be this parent. When I went to my first IEP meeting and they handed me the IEP, which was about, or my second IEP meeting, which was about maybe 20 something odd pages long. Then they handed me this book. Oh, and by the way, here's this, which you're probably going to get at every IEP meeting, right? You're going to get your procedure safeguards because it's a check mark for them, right?
Yeah.
Read through your procedure safeguards. Your procedure safeguards, it may vary from state to state. It may vary from district to district, but that's where it tells you your rights. It tells you all your rights about when you're coming to an IEP meeting, your requests, your concerns, how you notify, all those things. You need to read your procedural safeguards. Don't be me and put it off to the side and then need it later. You want to read that early on So you understand what before your rights are as a parent and what your child's. Yes. All of this, you should have a draft IEP. You should have your procedure safeguards. Know all these things prior to showing up in the meeting so you don't show up blindly. Because you don't want to be me where I was doing this the whole time. And yes, yes, yes. And then unfortunately, that first time, you know, first school year, once it was deemed eligible, I'm looking at all my yeses. And I'm like, oh no, this is definitely not working. We need to kind of reconvene. We need to go back to the table. And I needed to read my rights to say, how can I request, you know, going back? Are we able to go back? Is this set in stone? Remember that this IEP is not set in stone, that anytime that you can, you know, have concerns or requests or anything like that, make sure you do that in writing. You know, and that's a big piece, is making sure that you provide everything in writing to your team and ask the questions, express your concerns. If you're seeing things as far as your parent observations that, you know, within the progress or lack of, make sure you're doing this all in writing and putting it in front of your IEP team.
Yes. What she's saying, you guys, is pretty much you can amend an IEP. Let's say you had an IEP in IEP meeting last week. You did not, you finally realized something not right. You didn't agree with it. You can contact that teacher, and it's your parent right to amend it. Yes, you can amend the IEP. Even if you just did it. Another thing that I want parents to understand, read your parent book, read your parent rights, read it. When your kid first starts school, it's a book with all everybody email, read it. Take that time to fully understand your kid rights. That's what I do. I'm not gonna lie, sometimes a lot, but I put aside time to do it. Books I recommend is Right Law, like the last name, Right Law. There are parents who has a kid that has special needs, and they're lawyers. I recommend their books. I have pretty much all their books now. And just buy some books about IEPs and take time to learn about it.
Yeah.
I have a question, two questions. Why is it possible to go into college with a 504 plan, but not an IEP? I know the answer, but I want the viewers to know the answer. Because you can go into college with a 504, but not an IEP.
So I'm not sure where that came from. Because I want to free the myths and all of those things, because there's a transition process. Mm-hmm. And so students who have an IEP, and you may be able to elaborate more, Lisa, because you've been a teacher. When we're talking about the transition process, and I tell my families, especially for those kids that are going through high school, and especially if they're on a modified curriculum, make sure you request what they call like a transition record to transition into high school so they can accept those accommodations and services and support into high school. So it may not necessarily be called an IEP when you're talking about further education past high school, but they have the transition report that shows all the different accommodations, any kind of modifications for that curriculum, so your child can go into further education. In that as well, especially for families who have kids on an IEP in their high school years, be very careful about the modified curriculum, because you want to make sure that your child can enter into further education based on the curriculum that they are on. Be very careful with the modified side, because sometimes modified curriculums will kind of not necessarily stop you from going into college or further education, but it can be a barrier. So I'm not sure where that myth came in, because yes, it's not necessarily called an IEP, but you can request a transition report for the schools or whatever, as far as their further education, technical schools, community college can definitely accept that transition report to be able to accommodate that student in college or whatever further education that they're going to be seeking. Did that answer your question in a way? Because I don't want people to think that their child with an IEP can't go on to further education, because that's what the IEP is for. It's to be able to allow that child further education past or beyond high school.
Right. Great. Exactly. And I think you touched on something really important, which is that like diploma track versus a certificate path. Mm-hmm. And if the work has been modified so much that they haven't had access to the same curriculum, that their general education peers, or there's a fly flying around, their general education peers have had access to earn that diploma. If they've been denied that access to be able to complete that work, they're going to be on a certificate path. Mm-hmm. And then there has been a barrier put in front of them to access that further education. Now, there is no one straight line to get from childhood to adulthood, from high school to further education. You know, there's no one right way to adult. There's no one right way to human. So if you have a child who has, you know, they're still trying to build those foundational skills and modifying the work is what's appropriate to meet your child where they're at, that's totally fine. And that does not mean that at some point they won't be ready to access. They just might not be ready at that graduation point. So I'm not saying a certificate path is the wrong path. I'm just saying you want to know, because if your child is ready and has the skills to access that high school level diploma track curriculum, then you want them on that track, and you don't want the school just assuming, oh no, they can't do it, we're not going to give them access to the appropriate coursework, and we've sort of cut them off at the pass.
There you go.
I love the answer. I want to make sure I answer that question, because I don't want parents to think after high school their kids' education stops. Right. No, it goes on. See, I'm the parent that I'm thinking where my child want to go. I'm not just looking at now. I'm thinking about what would he be when he in temporary. I'm literally thinking about college, because I think he can do anything. So, and I've been learning more about my laws and my rights to know, okay, when he goes to college, what do I need? What do I need to do? So, and we had this come and say, great conversation, ladies. Great information. Thank you, guys. I try to have great conversations on the Bedroom Talk Show. I try to get guests that would educate me and you and just have a great conversation. I really try my hardest to find the best guests just for my roommates. I have one more question to wrap this up, and I think this is a great question. I know it by heart, but I'm going to put it on the screen. What 5 tips do you have for any parent who has an IEP or considering getting an IEP?
I guess we can both answer all 5, or you want 5 and 5.
It doesn't matter. Totally.
Okay. I guess I'll give one. Lisa, you give one. I give one. We could just kind of go like that.
Perfect.
So the 5 tips that, or one tip of the 5 that I would give, when you're requesting an IEP, definitely. And I said this earlier, do so in writing. If you have a concern, if there's challenges that your child is having, even if before entering into a public education, submit that in writing to whether it be just your school division, the school principal, counselor, what have you. Get it in the right hands to the right people and express your concern about your child if they are not on an IEP. That's just one tip.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And that in writing carries through whether it's that initial request for the full evaluation for special education or any kind of communication down the line. There's sort of this saying as it goes in special education, if it wasn't written down, it didn't happen. It can help you with creating a timeline. So another tip that I would have for somebody that is about to have an IEP meeting, whether it's their initial IEP meeting or any IEP meeting down the line, is, and Crystal, you put this up on the screen earlier about a parent input statement, submitting a parent input statement. And we could probably spend, Janelle and I both could probably spend a really long time talking about what that is. But in short, it's a formal communication between you and your child's IEP team, where you can sort of put your voice into the process and your child's voice into the process. So it's a place to express some concerns, give the team some focus. You can ask questions in it. You can make suggestions in it, and you can round it out with kind of a vision statement of, this is my hope and desire for my child. And when I write them for families, I always conclude with a statement of collaboration and appreciation, that I'm looking forward to this process of being able to work with you to, you know, have this great conversation to help, you know, push this child's education forward, et cetera, et cetera.
I love that. I do that, and I didn't even realize that's what I was doing.
You got good instincts.
Yes. I didn't even realize. I always say, well, I can't wait to work with you. I always say, I always, in my anything, I look forward to building this relationship.
Yes.
I didn't even know what the
words
called.
We, us, together. Use those words.
Instead
of the I, yeah, to separate yourself, because remember, this is a collaborative effort. This is a team effort. So use it. And I tell my families, make sure you use those words, we, us, togetherness, you know, collaboration, you know, all those words. So the team knows that you're not separating yourself from them and you're not separating them from you.
Yeah, 100%. All right. I have three more. That was two.
Okay. So for that, and I think we've had the discussion, just didn't put it kind of in a tip. The third thing that I would say is have some patience and grace. I don't want to sound inhumane in saying that or insensitive in saying that, because I've been through this process as a parent and I've been through it as an advocate and IEP coach for other families. But what I see sometimes is that some of my families, I don't want to necessarily say fail. I think it's the more of a challenging thing, because we want things to happen like yesterday, which I agree, they need to, because when you have a child like mine and Lisa, who's been delayed for so long and having access to the proper education, you want things to move faster, but have some patience and have some grace. The reason being is not to think, yes, we are advocating for our child, but your child is not the only child. And just know that by you doing what you're doing is creating more access for other children to come behind. So please have some patience and some grace for yourself. Have the patience, grace for the school.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And this came up a little bit earlier, and I just want to jump in and sort of verify this point, because most parents don't realize this. The likelihood that your child's teacher has a copy of your child's IEP is slim to none, especially if they have a general education placement. Special education teachers often cover more than 1 year of a child's life, but general education's change from year to year. And none of the general education teachers I support have copies of the IEPs of their students in their class. So I just want to throw that out there too. So my number four would be, connect to the adult autistic community. You want to be talking to, learning from, communicating with autistic adults, because they have, this is their lived experience. And so they know what it felt like to be a student in school. They know what supports worked or didn't work for them. And even better, to niche it down even more, there are a lot of autistic parents raising autistic kids. So they're navigating sort of both pieces of that. It's their lived experience, but what autism looks and feels like for them is probably different than what it looks like and feels like for their child. And so they're straddling all these worlds, and there are some phenomenal, phenomenal people. I'm assuming that most of your roommates are on Instagram. There's an entire community. You could probably just search the hashtag actually autistic and find quite a few remarkable, remarkable people. And that fear that we were talking about earlier, that fear of that label, you know, when you actually connect with the autistic community, those fears start to dispel, because you really get to see the humanity of these folks.
I agree with you. That's what I started doing when I started to advocate. I have friends that's on the spectrum, and they tell me their point of view. I listen to them and I try to understand their point of view, because I'm not autistic to my knowledge. I'm a parent, so, and I'm a mom. So number four, I agree with that. But some groups may be too much for some parents, because
absolutely. And there's certain things I would stay away from. So if I was going to give a warning, I would stay away from Autism Speaks.
I talked about that last year.
Did you?
I did. I hope they understood it, but I talked about it last year.
Yeah, I would stay away from that. That's a corporate entity.
They don't
does not have appropriate representation from the autistic community. And their funding is going to all the wrong places.
Amen.
And for me, as a parent and as, you know, a mentor with teachers and as a coach for parents, you know, going through this special education process, I read goals, I look at services and interventions and all those things so differently now that I have spent a good long time really connecting with the autistic community, because, you know, I've broadened my awareness and I know what autistic people feel is harmful for them. Obviously, mm-hmm. I'm painting with a broad stroke and everybody's an individual, but there are some themes. And I think I'm much more neurodiversity affirming now than I was even a year ago. So yeah, I think that's
important. Just do some research on Autism Speak, you guys. Find out why their color's blue. That was a fun fact. I'm mm-hmm. not going to even do that because I'm actually, the sad part is before I did a lot of research, I'm actually on their approved list. I'm an approved vendor. And so I don't publicly really badmouth Autism Speaks because I just don't. But I don't agree with their practices. I don't agree that they don't have people in higher power who are autistic. I don't agree with how they use their money. There's a lot of things that Autism Speaks do that I fully disagree with. And I hope over time they're here. I'm going to say the culture, the community, the culture. I hope they hear them. And I hope they start to make changes. That's part of the reason why you have a lot of autistic people don't like the puzzle pieces. They're heavily against it. I know some parents support it because they love it, but you have a lot of people that don't support the puzzle pieces. That's why if you look at my branding lately or in the last year, you will see it's paint and paint and paint. You don't see no puzzles because it's offensive to so many people that I say that I'm advocating for, I choose not to use that. So I think you guys should do some research on that. But yeah, I agree with you. I made an autistic friend and she's amazing. And I love listening to her. I even bought a book called, it's about an autistic kid. They wrote it to their parents. It was something.
Yeah, Sincerely, Your Autistic Child.
Yes. That's what I bought. I haven't took time to read it, but I said I'm going to take the step to buy it. And I just started buying a whole bunch of books from autistic community. And I'm supporting actually autistic people. And I'm taking time to understand my son because it's emotions I don't understand about him. And I'm trying to understand why he have a sensory overload, overload.
Sensory.
Yes. When we go to Beef My Store. So I'd be trying to understand him and not judge him so much. Just like the boy at Walmart who broke all them TVs. That was clearly autism. That was clearly a sensory overload. But the people there, they didn't see that. They just saw a kid acting out being bad.
Right. Right.
So, yeah.
All right, Janelle, you got a number five? Take us
yes,
home.
I do. We're going to take it home together, Lisa. I did want to segue into it, though, but about connecting with the community. And with some people knowing that not only do I have an LLC, where I help families with special education advocacy, also have a nonprofit organization. This is a shameless plug. And on my board of directors, I made an intentional decision to make sure that I had people who were not only actually autistic, but also ones that went through the school system on an IEP, because I can't speak to that. I'm only advocating for my son and helping other families advocate for their kids. So I intentionally made sure that I had people within my board of directors. So when we're looking at modifying supports and services within William is Artistic, I have people who can actually help me speak to those things. And I'm not creating those things and those services based on just one person, meaning my son. I have other folks who are on my board of directors, amazing people on my board of directors that actually help me make those decisions when I'm looking at enhancing or modifying my services. So to that, one of my board of directors, when he was young, he was told he wasn't going to be able to do X, Y, and Z. He was non-speaking at the time. Okay. His disability was used against him. My board of directors is a valedictorian for high school. And this is me segueing into number five, but also providing hope for families out there that's looking at present. Remember, there's a future for your child. Valedictorian for his high school and has gone off to get a college education and now is a best-selling author. And he sits on my board of directors. Okay.
I love it.
So in that, my number five is looking at the IEP for what it's for. And that's why I said, Lisa, we're going to tag team this one together. Right. Your IEP is for One is to further education,
employment,
and independent living. Look at it like that. And I kid you not, it's going to change even as young as early intervention. Look at the IEP for those three things, and it's really going to change how your mind looks at an IEP.
That's right.
Can you repeat that again? I was trying to type it as y'all said it.
Oh, sorry. First one is to further education.
Further education.
Further yes, education.
Further education.
That's what you said.
Mm-hmm. That's why I shared that story to kind of segue into that, to let you know that
that
it does those things. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Further education, employment.
Employment.
And independent
living.
And those are straight out of the mandate, the purposes mm-hmm. and finding of the mandate.
Yes.
So even though Janelle and I are so smart and lovely, we did not make that up.
No, we didn't.
I was just going to ask you, where did that come from? But you just told me.
Yeah, it comes from the Individuals with Disabilities and Education Act, the IDEA. Mm-hmm. It comes straight out of the purposes and findings of IDEA yep. law.
If you look at it that way, it'll change how you come to
That's
the meeting.
Right.
It'll change how you guys create the IEP with your IEP team. When you look at it in those ways, I promise you, it's going to change the way people IEP.
She told me that. Let me tell y'all. I praise God because I think we met through Clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But you have taught me things that you didn't even realize you was doing. I was listening to, when we talk on the phone, I be listening and I be taking mental notes and I put in this part of my brain. I'm like, okay, Janelle said this. So let me go do this. And when I ask for things, I know what I'm talking about. I'm like, Janelle said it, but let me go research it too. So I remember you saying this, she has free training, you guys, free. She's not shamelessly plugging her nonprofit because I was going to do it. She has free trainings where you guys monthly free trainings that I recommend that you guys attend. And if you watch the replay, please, I'm going to put it on my website. If you go to Zachariah World, she's actually already on there. You go to Zachariah World and go to the resources. She's on there for Virginia. For Virginia,
oh, thank
she's
you.
Nationwide. Yeah, she, I think, yeah, you on there. I
got to update
your website. But you guys, book her and Lisa. I don't care if you just do the free session and you don't end up paying them near the end, but at least get the knowledge because that's so important. And I hope this episode was great for you guys. I see the comments. I know you guys love when I do Autism Awareness Month. I try my hardest every year to outdo every April. I think this April, I think I did a great job. This last episode tops last year. Last episode, it was still a great episode. But I think you guys today just educated so many people about IEPs, 504 plans, and just advocating for their kid. I say it every time, but it coming from somebody else besides me, Crystal J, it helps. It works. And I hope that you guys continue to advocate for your kids. And thank you guys for being one to be on my podcast.
Thank you for having us.
My talk show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. This was wonderful. You're both phenomenal.
Yes. Thank you.
I tried my hardest. Like, I have to start saying podcast because I met somebody. He said, like, you got a talk show. You're the next Oprah. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about that. I guess that's a compliment.
You got to, hey, Matt, speak.
I got to start thinking about it.
That's right.
So I wanted to say thank you guys for being on my talk show. I appreciate you guys. If you need their information, I see I have a comment. Great panel, ladies. So much information.
Thank you.
If you need their website, you can go to and put it up for you guys. If you need a screenshot this now. This is Miss Lisa's website.
Yeah, don't judge. It doesn't look good. I need to work on it.
It's just a land. It's just a land. You got to think of
it's just a landing page.
It gets someone to you.
Yeah. But it gets you to me. And I offer the free 30-minute phone consultation. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, you are not obligated to go any further than this. I really try to give as much information as possible and follow up with an email with resources after the call so that if somebody's ready to go on their own, they're ready to go. And that's great.
Mm-hmm. Y'all heard that? She give you resources. Miss Lisa, can you email me some resources too that I can put on my website to help other parents?
Sure.
Okay, great.
That'd be helpful.
No, thank you. This girl, Miss Janelle, please screenshot it if you need it or write it down, whatever you need to do. I want to make sure you got both of their websites. William is artistic. She also have a book. I don't know why she's playing herself. So let me just drop the plug. She has a book on Amazon. Please go order that book. I'm hoping it's going to be on her website soon. But she has a book that she wrote about her child. I love it. It's very cute. If you want to introduce autism to your family, please look up her book on Amazon. William is autistic. Ms. Lisa, husband, has a book as well. Can you drop the name of that book?
Yeah, his book is called 13 Doors.
13 Doors. And is it available on Amazon?
It is, yeah.
So that's another book, you guys. Support authors. You know, I'm an author as well. So I want you guys to support these two authors, with her husband as an author and support her as an author. This was Janelle's first book. Please don't forget to do reviews on both books. And with that being said, I think we're done. Do you anybody have anything they want to add to this amazing episode?
Just thank you so much for having us. And
yes,
just know, if you're at home watching this and you're feeling overwhelmed by the special education process, you are not alone.
You're not. We gave so much information, and there's still so much, but we don't want to overwhelm you all. The process is overwhelming in itself. Right. So just, we're here. We always say don't IEP alone. I would never ever tell someone to do this by yourself, no matter how knowledgeable. Even as a parent, I still need my advocate to show up for me when I show up for my son's IEP meeting. Right. Because emotionally, I'm guiding the meeting that way. And sometimes it's very hard. So don't do it by yourself.
Okay, before we leave, because I know this may be a question on somebody's brain, what does it mean to not IEP alone? I had to end it right there because I'm sorry.
We had this conversation.
I know what you mean, because
right.
I was told the same thing. But yeah, I just end it right there.
When I say it, and there is an organization out there, so I'm not plugging the organization, but there's an organization that says it. But when I say don't IEP alone, I look at my personal experience and how I tried to navigate the process by myself, and I ended up needing someone to help me navigate this, okay. Whether it was for emotional support, whether it was for IEP guidance, I needed someone to help me through this. Because you will see, as a parent, when you're sitting in that meeting, you're giving so much information at one time that it's so hard when you walk out that door to make sure that this and your notes, right, collected everything that you needed to continue to advocate for your child's access to their education. So right. I always say, don't do it by yourself. Bring in someone who is knowledgeable about the process that can collect the bulk of that information so you can really process everything you need to do as a parent or guardian in your meeting. That's why I say don't IEP alone.
Right.
Okay. I'm happy she said it, you guys. Because I have to add two more things before I forgot. I would have got off here and been like, I forgot. Please do not forget to get a copy of your minutes. That is yours. Don't forget to get a copy of your recording. Yes, you can record the IEP. Just give them a 24-hour notice based on your state. But don't forget to get the recording and the minutes. Those two things are needed. And make sure the minutes is exactly that, everything that was said, that y'all said in that meeting. But you can go back and say, oh, you said this and I said this. So that's important that you get both of those things. I think we gave you guys a lot of information. I hope we did not overwhelm you, because I'm not going to lie, my first IEP, I was very overwhelmed. But, you know, with that being stated, thank you guys. I'm your host, Crystal J.
Thank you.
And these are my great guests. I hope you guys enjoy it. Bye, you guys.
Bye, shit, my thinking different. People wicked. They be calling you special. I call you gifted. Won't forget it. My whole life changed.